Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Good evening, Carlos. And just to let you know, you're coming through very clear tonight. Hey, Carlos, Navy vet Billy Hurley wins Tiger's tournament. Tiger says he's playing again. The Greenbrier is completely flooded. And more players are pulling out of the Olympics as we speak. We have a lot of golf to talk about tonight, so let's go.
Yes, we do. And I have something to say about that, about the Olympics. So everybody.
I hear a rant. I feel a rant coming on.
You know me, this is coming. But anyway, we'll get to that later on in the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. We also have on our practice range, we're going to talk about the LPGA and the PGA Tour and the condensed schedule, what's coming up, what you can expect next, including the Olympics, the 9 weeks that are remaining. So a lot of golf to talk about. But we're going to start right away with the weekend backspin. And like you mentioned, hey, I'm going to start talking about the PGA Tour. And for someone who had not won on the PGA Tour, entering the Quicken Loans Nationals, Billy Hurley III, he summoned championship medal when it mattered most. He birdied consecutive holes in the back nine Sunday to pull away from what was a cathartic triumph there at Congressional Country Club. The 2004 graduate of the Naval Academy and Leeburg native collected his first winner's check in 104 career starts since turning pro in 2006. A year before, he began serving on a destroyer as part of his military commitments. The win also came less than a year after Hurley's father died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Hurley carded the final round of 2 under par 69 to finish 17 under for the tournament, 3 strokes clear of Vijay Singh, who at 53 was seeking to become the oldest player to win a PGA Tour event. His great effort earned him a place in the Open Championship. John Rahm and Bill Haas tied for third at 13 under, 271, on a course that played the second longest among non-majors this season and has hosted 3 U.S. Opens and 1 PGA Championship. Hey, let me tell you, John Rahm, he's the real deal. I mean, this man from Spain was a top-rated amateur in the world for good reason, and he has shown off his skills the last 2 weeks. He finished in the top 25 in the U.S. Open and then posting a P3 finish at Congressional. I mean, he gained some important experience. He was a 36-hole leader, and he can just only take this going forward. He earned also a fat paycheck and a spot at Royal Prune. Ernie Els was a member there at Congressional, where he won the U.S. Open in 1997. He was looking for his first win since 2012 in the Open Championship. He played alongside Hurley, but after being just one back, making the turn, he never recovered from putting the ball in the water and finished solo fifth. Wes Simpson, hey, he has been creeping off the leaderboards lately. He played 4 solid rounds and finished solo sixth. And Harold Varner III, he birdied the 15th hole, and that gave him the one stroke needed to finishing solo sixth ahead of the seventh place. And with that, he earned, along with Hurley, Vijay, and Rahm, the 4 available spots to play in the Open Championship next month. Worth noting is that Ricky Fowler, hey, this guy is good. He still has some issues to figure out. He finished 244 this week despite a strong 68-68 start, and he was one of the favorites going in. And then this weekend he had a disappointing one, going 33-74, and he never factored in the discussion for winning. Bryson DeChambeau, my God, he fell back into his regular PGA Tour doldrums at Congressional with a T64 finish. He played well in majors, but in the regular tournaments, he seems to not have what he takes. I don't know so far. He made the cut and had a good paycheck, but he's running out of sponsor exemptions to get the points needed, which is 361, to obtain a temporary status for the season and then make a push for the tour card for next year. Also, Jordan Newbridge, who we talked about last week, was making his pro debut, but he didn't make the cut. Finally, I mean, for Billy Hurley, the victory is life-altering on several fronts. First, the two-time honorable mention All-Met at Loudoun County High earns a full exempt status from the PGA Tour for the next 2 years. He had been splitting time between the PGA and the Web.com Tours. Other perks include a spot in the finals in the year's final two majors, the British Open and the PGA Championship, as well as the next year's Masters. He entered the tournament number 607 in the World Golf Rankings and had missed a cut in 4 out of the past 6 events. His highest previous finish this season was a tie for his 41st at the Byron Nelson late May. Fred, I can't see a better story this year in golf than this win by Billy Hurley.
Yeah, they're really pushing that, that story. But I think the story of the year is going to be the Dustin Johnson ruling and all the fiasco around that at the U.S. Open when we get all said and done. But it was a very good story. Really great to see Billy Hurley win. You know, he dedicated 6 years to military service coming through the Naval Academy, so really good for him. You know, another sidelight to the Quicken Loans last week was seeing Tiger on camera. You know, it was just good to see Tiger around a golf tournament. And being, you know, just being a good guy. You know what? I like seeing Tiger around a little bit. I kind of miss him. Hey, Carlos, let's talk a little bit about the LPGA. A familiar name. I think you'll know this name. Lydia Ko won again. Over the weekend, she outlasted Morgan Pressel at the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship. Pressel had posted 65-63 over the first two rounds, but the teenage sensation from New Zealand fired a season-low 62 on Saturday to tie Pressel for the 36-hole lead. Ko started slow in her second round on Saturday. She just had two birdies for two under par 34 on her first nine holes. But on the backside, she made four consecutive birdies at 11 through 14. She added one more at 17 and then eagled 18 just for good measure, totaled up seven under par 28. How are you supposed to beat a 28? That's what Morgan Pressel's wondering. Paired with Ko in the final group on Sunday, Pressel hung tough on the front nine with two under par 34. But while Ko was making birdies, again on 11 through 14, Pressel made four consecutive bogeys. She finished with an even par 71 and a tied for second with Candy Kung, who had led after the first round with a 7 under par 64. A lot of low scores at the Arkansas tournament last week. For Ko, this was her third win this season and 13th career. She leads the money list with $1.8 million plus. Her career earnings jumped to $6.7 million. She has a huge lead in the race to the CMA Globe for the third year in a row. Nobody's ever going to win this thing. She's not going to let anybody else have that million-dollar bonus. She's going to keep getting it every year. And remember now, she's only 19, so she's got a ways to go. The ladies head to the Pacific Northwest, where Brooke Henderson will defend her title at the Cambia Portland Classic. She won last year in Portland. She won earlier this year in Seattle, and she's from Canada. I would not bet against her this week, Carlos. And I know you did this on purpose. Just because you gave me the LPGA Tour to cover, just because you did not want to talk about the Sumatra Tour and the young lady from Thailand that won the Island Resort Championship right up here in Michigan in the UP, but her name's not Jutanagarn, Sherman Champagne, Santi Wewat Tanapong. My apologies to the young lady for butchering her name. I'm sure I probably did. She carded a 369 to win the Island Resort Championship by two shots. She moves into third place in the Sumatra Tour money list behind Marlene Sackstrom and Jackie Stoltring and appears to be a lock to earn her LPGA Tour card for next year. Santi Wewat Tanapong, I think. Up to you, Carl.
Good try. Good enough. I always have the European Tour and this kind of name. Sometimes, you know, you got to get them. So That's good. That's good. Good try. Good try. Hey, talking about the European Tour, the Stensenator, Ray Hendrik Stenson, he put a sizzling second round at the U.S. Open
on
Sunday to win the BMW International Open in Germany. As you might remember, after shooting a 169 in his opening round at Oakland last week, Stenson struggled so much in round two that he withdrew when play was suspended, citing minor neck and knee issues. But 1 week made a huge difference, and Stenson persevered through having to play 36 holes in 1 day after rain delays affected the play, and a nervy finish on which he overcame four bogeys on his final round to finally finish at 17 under, three shots clear of Darren Fichard and Thorbjørn Olsen. Rafael Jacquelin, he finished fourth at 11 under. And my boy, Sergio Garcia, who came close to matching his first major title at the U.S. Open, he finished in the tie for fifth at 10 under after firing four straight rounds under par. The victory is Stenson's 10th on the European Tour, which drops him level with Bernhard Gallagher, Graham Marsh, Graham McDowell, Adam Scott, and Jack Nicklaus. The win was Stenson's fifth top six finish in his last eight starts on the European Tour this season and moved him up to fifth in the world, which is behind Rory McIlroy, who has 13 European Tour victories to his name. They both have a long way to go to catch Sergi Ballesteros, who racked 50 European Tour wins across the 20-year period that he played. Fred Stenson's had a little hiccup here and there, like in the U.S. Open, but he's been playing solid, just had not been able to get a trophy, but he did now at the BMW International Open, which is one of the flagship events on the European Tour, and that could spark one of his signature late-season runs.
Nobody's ever going to catch Seve on the European Tour for wins because nobody's going to play the European Tour that much. If they're that good, they're going to be playing the PGA Tour. So that record is probably pretty safe. Hey, Carlos, the Champions Tour visited the land of the Cheeseheads last week, and Kirk Triplett fired a three-round total of 17 under par to get the big check. Steve Stricker had a hand in bringing the inaugural American Family Insurance Championship to the University Ridge Golf Course in Madison, Wisconsin, but he won't even be able to join the old guys until next year. Triplett posted the day's low round, 65, with Sun Sam on the bag last week. It was Triplett's fifth career Champions Tour win. He made three birdies on the front, but got hot on the back side on Sunday with five birdies and a six-hole stretch from 11 through 16. With a $300,000 first-place check, Triplett moves into fifth place in the Charles Schwab Cup race with almost $768,000. The senior circuit has the 4th of July weekend off to stay home and play with the grandkids before heading to Enjoy Golf Club in Endicott, New York for the Dick's Sporting Goods Open. Fran Quinn, planning on a sponsor's exemption in Wisconsin, earned a spot in the field for the Dick's Sporting Goods Open with a T4 finish last week. Here's an interesting story. Ken Green, who lost a portion of his right leg and now wears a prosthetic, made his first start in nearly a year. He carted rounds of 75-77 over the first 2 days, but finished on Sunday with a 1-under par 71. To play, 54 holes in competitive golf and be out there with a prosthetic leg, hats off to Ken Green. Good for you. Hey, Carlos, one more thing. Your boy John Daly, you remember him, had a 66 on Sunday. His best round in his first six events on the PGA Tour, champions. He tied for 36th at 7-under par. There's your boy, John Daly, getting her done.
He does that from time to time. He just gets one good, and the rest is just John Daly. Anyway, look, on the web.com tour, there is celebration in Georgia Tech. They will have a second new PGA Tour member next season, former Tech All-American Ole Schniederjans. One of the greatest players in school history, Schniederjans won the Air Capital Classic in Wichita, Kansas this past Sunday on the second hole of a sudden death playoff, securing a top 25 finish on the money list of the web.com tour that will give him membership on the big tour next season. It was Schniederjans' first win on the web.com tour. He is in his first full year as a professional after finishing his decorated tech charity last spring. Schneider Jans, he dropped an 18-foot birdie putt on the second hole of the playoff to secure the win. He finished 72 holes at 17 under 263, tying with Colin Morikawa of Cal and professional J.J. Spahn. Schneider Jans tied the course record at Crestview Country Club with a 61 in the third round. He played the final 46 holes, mind-boggling, without a bogey. Wow. With four top 10 finishes, now Schneider Jans is the number three on the money list with 245,713. The top 25 earned PGA Tour cards, the number 25 earner last year, earned 161,102, so he's safely up there. And why Georgia Tech is celebrating? Well, because the other one is former Tech player Richie Werenski, who will also earn a promotion to the PGA Tour. He's number two on the money list with one win in 2 seconds. Another former teammate of theirs, Anders Albertsen, is in the hunt at number 38 on the money list, so he's not out. Schneider Jans, you might remember, he missed the opportunity to earn a PGA Tour card by the narrowest of margins last year on literally one stroke in three different tournaments would have given him the chance to play for a Tour card. He described that outcome, not surprisingly, as just brutal. But hey, Fred, the wait has proven worth it for him. And with that, we'll close the weekend backspin. We're now going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to have our new Part 5 news presented by United Golf Network, so don't go anywhere.
Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
And now we're back, and it's time for the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. And, Fred, here it is. You're going to take the tee shot, and you're going to talk about who are out officially of the Rio Olympics.
Yeah, we're going to spend some time talking about the Olympics tonight, Carlos, because I know you have a few words to say, and I've got quite a bit here, actually. There's
That's a statement, Fred. Fred, that's an understatement. I have a few words. That's an understatement.
I was trying to be nice.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
And there's breaking news today. Two more players announced also. You know, the defections from the Rio Olympic Games, again, top our news stories this week, Carlos. Rory McIlroy defected the other day. He had just said at the memorial a couple weeks ago and in his interview with David Faraday that he had received his vaccinations and was looking forward to representing Northern Ireland in the Rio Olympics. Something or someone changed his mind. He announced last week that he would not compete in the Olympics in August over concerns about the Zika virus. This is a huge blow for the Games. Rory said last Wednesday, even though the risk of infection from the Zika virus is considered low, it is a risk, nonetheless, and a risk I am unwilling to take. In addition, today, Jason Day and Shane Lowry announced they would not attend the Rio Olympics. Carlos, we've been covering the Olympic story for several weeks, and even though Adam Scott, Charles Schwartzel, Mark Leishman, and Louis Oosthuizen had announced previously that they would not take the part in the Games, Rory and now Jason Day are the biggest losses of all. Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler are still in, but without Worlds number 1 and 4, it's going to leave a big hole. The International Golf Federation released the following statement about Rory's departure. The IGF is disappointed with Rory's decision, but recognizes that some players will have to weigh personally a unique set of circumstances as they contemplate their participation in golf's historic return to the Olympic Games in Rio. With the Zika virus foremost among them, it is unfortunate the Zika virus has led to Rory's decision to withdraw from the Olympic Games, knowing how much he was looking forward to taking part. As we have stated before, the Olympics is the world's greatest celebration of sport, and we remain excited about golf's return after a 112-year absence. It will truly be a special occasion for our sport, and we are confident that the 60 men and 60 women who will represent their respective countries will find it an experience they will cherish forever. You know, Carlos, in any week on the PGA Tour or LPGA Tour, I mean, there's not everybody plays. You know, they take weeks off for different reasons. They like to play at different courses. So maybe we're making too big a deal out of this Olympic thing. It's just a thing that where some of the players are just taking that week off. They're just not going to play. There is some question as to whether or not Nike was involved in Rory's decision to skip the Olympics. According to Golf Central Daily, Nike passed on the opportunity to sponsor the Irish Olympic team, and New Balance will be outfitting them instead. Rory, of course, is now Nike's biggest star, and it may have been somewhat embarrassing to see him dressed head to toe in a competitor's gear. There's also the possibility, with Rory scheduled to get married to Erica Stoll on New Year's Eve at Ashford Castle in Ireland, he has decided the risk is too great for he and his new bride. On the heels of Rory's announcement, fellow Irishman Graham McDowell announced he would not be able to fill in for Rory at the Olympics. He and his wife are expecting their second child shortly after the Olympics in September, and GMAC had made commitment not to play outside the U.S. this season to assure he was close to home should he be needed on short notice. An IOC member from Canada, Barry Meister, feels golf should lose its place if it can't guarantee the participation of top players. "I think it's appalling," Meister, winner of the Olympic gold medal in hockey at Montreal 76, told New Zealand radio station News Talk ZB. See, that's what I like, a hockey guy who's in an ice rink. You know, not many Zika, not many of the mosquitoes in the ice rink, I'm not thinking, okay? "I don't like it. I don't think the sport should be allowed to continue in the games under that scenario. Once they've got in, they have to deliver. You got to get those guys there no matter what." Well, I'm sorry, buddy. Golf isn't like hockey. Just getting in with your name and then putting up some second or third rate players is so far from the Olympic ideal or the expectation of the Olympic movement. The Olympics is about the best, and they pledge the best. Quite frankly, any sport that cannot deliver its best athletes, in my view, should not be there. You know, for one of the guys that sits on the committee that takes all the bribes and lines their pockets from all the cities and countries that pay bribes to get them to come to their stupid city, I don't want to hear from this guy. This guy makes me mad, actually. Carlos, one thing about these Olympic Games in Rio de Janeiro, they are not lacking for drama and great stories to talk about as we write and you know, things to write about. So, Carlos, with that, I'm going to take a break. I'm just going to sit back and enjoy your fine oratory.
How much time we have left? I don't know if
you have enough. You got about 37 minutes.
Oh, my God. Let me see if I can shorten this up.
I don't have a mute button either. I'm at your mercy, buddy.
The mute button, I think it's broken. You know, this is frustrating because I really am sick and tired.
You're Zika and tired?
Yeah, Zika and tired of all this BS about the Zika. Really, really. I'm going to give everybody, especially the golfers, I hope they listen to what I'm going to say about the Zika, okay? Does getting Zika raise a woman's risk of birth defects in future pregnancies? You know, this is a question that has been asked of experts repeatedly. Will infection with Zika now raise a woman's risk of delivering a child with birth defects in the long run? You know, health officials, they have hedged the responses because the issue hasn't been thoroughly studied. But to people who know viruses, there's almost certainly no reason to think infection raises a woman's long-term risk. It's the virus that causes the birth defects, and the virus clears from a person's bloodstream within about 2 weeks. No virus, no possibility that it can cause birth defects. You know, I read an article by that featured Dr. Denise Jameson, who is a senior member of the CDC's Zika response team. And she talked about this And I will give you the condensed version because otherwise I would need like two shows on what she said. But if you want to know, send me an email. I will send you all the links about that. But both the World Health Organization and the CDC, don't just take my word for it. You can look it up at their websites, said it's only when you're pregnant or around the time of conception and there is a virus circulating that it can then be passed to the fetus. That's the time of concern. What happens is that the virus is circulating in the mom's blood, and they think it gets passed to the fetus. That has been linked to the defects in the fetus in the baby causing the supposed microcephalia. You know, the Zika virus only stays in the blood for a relatively short amount of time. I've known people that had it. And once the virus has cleared from the blood, there's no concern, absolutely no concern about future pregnancies. Absolutely zero, no concern, no possibility. And in fact, based on what they know about other similar flaviviruses, they think that once you're infected, you're protected from future infections. So they believe you're not at risk for future pregnancies. If the woman has Zika, she would have to wait 8 weeks to get pregnant. And this is being very careful, a very careful estimate to make sure all the virus has cleared from the blood. Being very careful estimate. Men who are infected, well, they are more concerned about it, but that is only because they are more concerned about the virus persisting in the semen, so that in that case, she says, the doctor, that they should wait 6 months before having unprotected sex. So the question is, why can a virus survive in the semen longer than in blood? Well, that is because the testicles are thought to be in an immunological privileged site. There are certain parts of the body where the virus can persist for longer periods of time with some viral diseases, and one of these sites is the testicles. So the wait period has been isolated up to 2 months, but they want to be more than careful, and they have tripled that to 6 months. So it's up to 2 months, but if you want to just make sure, wait 6, or it's just have protected sex. So why the big fuss about this Zika thing? I would like for everyone to stop being hypocrites and start calling things by their name. Contrary to the rest of the athletes in other sports and followers around the world think, an Olympic medal is not as important to you golfers as your majors or the FedEx Cup or any WGC. It's all about me, 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 and not about the country. Just be upfront and say it. It's not as bad as using this blatant excuse like the Zika virus, which unlike other viruses that are also transmitted by the Aedes aegypti, which is a mosquito that does, and has worse things like the dengue, which could be lethal to your immune system. You can be dead by it. Or the chikungunya that leaves you lingering effects afterwards, and both knock you out really, really bad. Zika symptoms, they are mild and last less than a week. I will tell you one thing. Just like Patty Harrington said, golf must be given time before being written off as an Olympic sport. He says because golfers are a different breed of sport, people, because their career is so long and their age profile is so different, that most of these guys pulling out would like to play this year, but they know that they'll have a chance in 4 years' time. That's different from a lot of other athletes who will only get a chance at the Olympics. You know, I truly hope that you're right, Patty, about that, and the Olympics will return in 2020, because after this fiasco, I don't think they will. You know, I really hope they do. But I have always said this, like, it's like tennis that was badly received when it first came into Olympics. And right now, I have not heard anyone in tennis, after all this time, who have a worse condensed schedule than the golfers, and their biggest stars make more money in the tournaments than the top golfers, complain about Zika. Novak Djokovic, the number one, has said it's unthinkable to think about the cancellation of the games, and he will be there. At Wimbledon this week, Andy Murray, he reconfirmed that he will be there. He's world number two. World number three, and maybe the best tennis player of all time, Roger Federer, who recently returned to competition after injuries and could have said, hey, I can use the rest. But he said he has never reconsidered his decision and said, and I quote, regardless of where it was in the world, it was always going to be a priority for me. I'll put mosquito spray on my body. I'll take the precautions I have to do. End of quote. Of course, it feels like deja vu. I said that a couple of months ago. here. You just put on your deed and go about your business. End of story. Serena Williams, she wants to defend her beloved title more than anything. Garbine Muguruza, who just beat her in the French Open and is one of tennis news and brightest stars, you know, she said she's going for gold. In other sports, I've only heard of American cyclist TJ Van Garderen pulling out of because of the Zika. Athletes have decided to attend, but take extra precautions against the Zika. South Korea's team will wear Zika-proof uniforms, which features blazers and pants penetrated, pre-treated with mosquito repellent. You know, this is frustrating to the extreme, not because some golfers are not taking this as it should be. I know this would be a growing process. I know they wouldn't accept it at the beginning, but because the excuse that they are using is what keeps the supposed chaos running. The information out there, reach for it, and don't fall for the hidden agenda of some people. I am from Puerto Rico, and various dengue outbreaks there, and chikungunya, that if that would be in Brazil, I would be the first one to say, hey, we're talking about something huge. But Zika, really, you have to be kidding me. And I'll end this here because I have a lot more, but I can't say I'm getting too excited. And if you have something to say, just say it. Just say the truth. If you don't want to go there because you prefer your four majors, your four Olympics, like Rory said, in 1 year, okay? Just say it. It wouldn't be as bad. You know, if you have something to say about this, Fred, say it now before I start talking about Tiger and his son Charlie.
Yeah, the only thing I want to say quickly, Carlos, I really think you've hit on the point there is the schedule. And we're going to talk about it in more detail in a minute, so I'm not going to go into detail. But they stuck the Olympics in between, you know, right there in August with the FedEx Cup coming up, right after two majors, you know, and they're in the WGC Bridgestone this week, and there's just a lot of stuff going on. And we're talking about some serious money, Carlos. You know, there's $34 million of prize money in the FedEx Cup, plus the $10 million going to somebody, whoever wins the FedEx Cup playoff. And then there's another $25 million on top of that bonus money going out. So, you know, they're playing for about $69 million over those 4 weeks right after the Olympics. They're going to be going over to Europe for the Open Championship, coming back, playing a couple weeks, going to Brazil and coming back, and then going to that's a lot of stuff, and I really think that's the real problem. If you boil it down, they might be using the Zika, like you said, but I really think that's the real problem. Because you don't hear – the golf is the only ones that you hear about doing it, and there's just too much money on the line for them to mess around. They all know – like you said, Carlos, they all know that time is short. They might have another chance in 4 years, but they might not have a chance to make the kind of money they're making right now in 4 years. You know, their careers might be at the tail end or, you know, just their putting stroke might go. Who knows what? You know what? If I'm them, I might be making the same decision, but I'm going to leave it at that. We're going to talk about scheduling some more here in a little bit. So, good points, Carlos. Well made.
You know, just to touch a little bit on the schedule, I meant about the condensed schedule that the tennis players, because I'm trying to compare it to tennis. Tennis
right.
has a more condensed schedule than the golfers. They play more tournaments. They play more longer because they sometimes in the majors they have to play 2 weeks, not one, two. And they are going to have the same effect. It's just that I say, you know, they have to give it a shot. The Olympics are the biggest thing in sports. Outside of what the golf world thinks, the Olympics, if people really have to start thinking about the big picture, we are never, ever going to truly get a globalized sport, okay, a massification of it, if we don't get the Olympics into it. No other way you're going to go and reach people and kids out there that would love and give an arm and a leg to go into the Olympics and have something to pull out. I'm just going to give you one example. I have this friend who's a single mom, and she has this kid that could not excel in basketball. He tried volleyball, he tried baseball, he couldn't. I told her, hey, give golf a shot. This kid, she gave him golf clubs to start on it. This was about 2 years ago. Now he's on the team of the of his high school, and now he has big dreams about it. That's the way that you give kids really a chance to give a shot. If you put the Olympics in those parts of the world where the Olympics are really the big thing, because the only place that I see this is in the golf. I mean, everywhere in, around the world, they, all the athletes want to go to the Olympics. The only sport that you're hearing this is in golf. You have to sometimes think beyond you, okay, beyond me. Yes, this is 1 year. It's just 1 week. Like Federer said, hey, just take that week, go there. Rory, in the beginning, he said, it's just go play four rounds, and that's it, you're out. It's not like tennis that you have to play 2 weeks. Man, it's really, sometimes, I wish they could think about the bigger picture and think about golf as a whole and how to give that expedite to try to massificate the sport. We're really kidding if we think we're going to do it the way that we're doing it. You want to really expedite, which is what a lot of people are saying, you need to have those top players reach the Olympics. That's where I'm going to finish it.
You better come up with some oxygen, man. You better take a break.
Yeah, I don't know if I can give the news now about Tiger. But anyway, Tiger Woods, he continues to make progress in his recovery from back surgery, and he's not ruling out a returning time for the years to final majors. Woods said on Wednesday at the Quicken Loans National, a tournament he hosts annually but didn't play this year, that he has worked his way up to playing 18 holes on consecutive days. But he has set a higher bar for what he needs to do to return to the PGA Tour. He said, and I quote, it's about 4 or 5 days in a row. It's about me playing 36 holes on a daily basis. I am not quite there yet. I'm trying to get there. I'm trying to get there as fast as I can, but I'm trying to do it right at the same time. As you know, I've pushed through a lot of injuries and rehabs before in the past, and I'm trying to do it correctly this time, end of quote. Woods hasn't played since the Windham Championship last August and underwent a follow-up procedure on his back in mid-September. He said he has been pleasantly surprised that his length off the tee doesn't appear to have been affected by his injuries. The 40-year-old former number one has completed only 2 of the last 10 major championships, skipping 4 due to injury and missing the cut in 4 more. His last major title came at the 2008 U.S. Open. The next major, as we all know, is the Open Championship in July 2014 at Thun. And with the PGA Championship set to follow 2 weeks later on a calendar compressed by the golf return to the Olympics, which we will talk about, Woods still isn't putting a timetable on his return, but he also wasn't ready to bow out of any events beyond this week's tournament at Congressional. We can understand when he says he won't risk putting his body on the line again. Nobody really knows when he'll be back in action, even Woods himself. Most golf fans and pundits agree that Woods' next comeback might be his last. So it's not surprised that he's unwilling to rush things. And while we still don't know when Tiger Woods will be returning to competition, at least there's one member of his family finding his way atop the leaderboards this summer, and if not his niece, Cheyenne, it's his son, Charlie Axel Woods, who showed he was cut from the same golf club as his champion father, tying for second place at a kids' golf event earlier this week. The 70-year-old Charlie shot 55 at the 9-hole U.S. Kids Golf of South Florida Tour event at the Mayaco Lakes Club Country Club in West Palm Beach, which is near his home in Jupiter, Florida. And according to the tour's Facebook page, proud Papa Tiger was present at the event. I don't know if you saw the pictures, but the winner, Henry Crow, he won by 5 shots and is almost double in size that of Charlie. In fact, Charlie looked like a little kid. I mean, he is, but in comparison to the others, he was very small. Fred Tiger has said in the past that Charlie has quite the golf swing. Last year, he said he actually was trying to emulate some things that his son does well. Maybe that is why he's taking so much time to come back. He may be trying to reinvent that swing to model to Charlie's one.
No, Carlos, the reason he's taking longer is at 40, your body doesn't return. It doesn't rehab nearly as fast as it does when you're 25 or before 30. Hey, Carlos, here we are nearly 2 weeks after the Dustin Johnson ruling at the U.S. Open, and the discussion still rages. Gary Van Sickle, writing in Sports Illustrated, said, "The eyeball test and the weight of the evidence says they got it wrong. Wrong and wrong. Johnson was sure he did not cause the ball to move. In golf, that's the end of it. But a couple of guys in a TV booth decided he should be penalized. Hall and Pagel called Johnson a liar. They didn't use those words, but by assessing a one-shot penalty, they branded him a liar, as well as Lee Westwood and the USGA walking rules official, Mark Newell. I don't believe any of those three are liars, and I don't see what evidence there was to levy the penalty. Pagel said that if it were just even a 51% chance that Johnson might have caused the movement, then a penalty must be assessed. 51%? There is no such thing. That's like being 51% pregnant. You either are or you aren't. Dustin Johnson's playing partner, Lee Westwood, felt left out of the decision, even though he vehemently argued that the decision they had made on the green was correct. He is, after all, the rest of the field's monitor for rulings to protect him. He had to invite himself into the video viewing with Dustin at the end of the round and still argues against the ruling. Fox gained respect for their coverage of the ruling, but few saw it. There was a record low audience. There was Fox earned, they handled the mishap well, getting Hall and Pagel in the booth with Brad Facts and Paul Azinger and Joe Buck. But Fox reported 2.34 million viewers, down from 3.5 million viewers last year at Chambers Bay. Of course, the coverage was aired in prime time from the West Coast. It's also down from 2.44, which just a little bit down, from NBC and ESPN in 2014. Fox did have a strong audience for the final round on Sunday with 5.4 million viewers. That, too, is down again from Jordan Spieth's win last year at Chambers Bay, but that, again, was prime time. It is up from Martin Keimer's runaway victory in 2014 at Pinehurst. USGA Executive Director Mike Davis admitted they made a big bogey. Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus, and even Arnold Palmer weighed in negatively against the USGA. Charlie Hoffman said on Twitter, "I might not be able to play in a professional event run by amateurs ever again." Randall Mell from GolfChannel.com wondered, with USGA's credibility so under assault right now, with the world's best players poised to revolt, with some pushing for the PGA Tour to take charge of their own rulemaking, it's more important than ever for the USGA Executive Director Mike Davis to be out front. You may not agree with some of his U.S. Open setup philosophies, some of his creative tweaks. He has had an old formula, but Davis is a persuasive figure. He is a true believer. He is committed to his principles, and he knows how to sell his ideas. He can give eloquent, thorough explanations for the most controversial decisions. That's why his voice is needed to soothe all the angst, to reassure the faithful that reasonable complaints are being heard and reasonable solutions are being sought. The only guy that I've heard come out in favor of this thing was the PGA Tour's lead official, Slugger White, and he says the call was right. He is kind of standing with his boys because he knows how hard it can be sometimes to get it right. You know, Slugger would not have screwed this up like the USGA did, I guarantee you. Other golf media heavyweights weighed in. Alan Shipnick, "It was a brutal public relations hit for the USGA, and Davis's quasi-apology didn't really help. I got the first interview with him at Oakmont. Davis was upstairs in the locker room changing into his tie for the trophy presentation. I pounced on him. At that point, DJ was on the 16th hole, and Davis still hadn't seen the video of the incident. He was just going by reports from other staffers. It was clearly an institutional breakdown in communication and procedures. This will all lead to some soul-searching, and clearly the USGA needs to overhaul how it handles things on the ground at big tournaments." Mike Bamberger added, "In my opinion, the videotape was completely inconclusive, and I would not have assessed Johnson the shot. But to reach another conclusion is entirely reasonable. Now, if you want to say there should be a new rule by which these minute movements shouldn't matter, go ahead and try to draft such a rule. But right now, the rule is that any movement must be accounted for, and the USGA was trying to do right by Johnson and the rest of the field. That is its obligation. The rest, including Tiger and Jordan and Big Jack himself, is noise. The USGA is not the public relations business. Its purpose is to stage a championship and assure the rules, which it tries constantly to improve, are applied fairly to all. But then Gary Van Sickle kind of summed it up. Nice of Davis to apologize for delay in penalty assessment, a terrible mistake. But by Monday, he had plenty of time to recognize that Hall and Pagel had wrongly assessed a penalty and ignored USGA's own definition that unless the facts show that a player caused the ball to move, there is no penalty. I lost a lot of respect for the USGA on this one. This can't happen again. Carlos, I had so many questions and I just couldn't stand it. I wrote a piece and posted it to back9blog.com entitled Questions Persist After the USGA Ruling Fiasco at Oakmont. If viewers want to take a look at that, just go to back9blog.com and they can find that there. Carlos, you got a few words for us about the Greenbrier that has become the Greenbrier River.
Yes, I recommend everybody to go read your article, and I'm not going to talk about it because I rented enough for today, so I'm out of rents. But yes, the PGA Tour and Greenbrier officials announced a release just by Saturday. The Greenbrier Classic has been canceled due to the heavy rain that devastated West Virginia. Tour officials said the OTPC, the old YTPC host course for the tournament, suffered extensive damage that is beyond reasonable repair to conduct the tournament. Scheduled to begin July 7th, the tournament is canceled, tour officials announced. You know, the old YTPC course is located on the Greenbrier Resort, a posh setting that must recover from extending damage. The course located in Sulphur Springs, West Virginia, was hit with 8 to 10 inches of rain. It's the first time since the 2009 edition of what is now the Sanderson's Farm Championship at Tour event was canceled because of weather problems. Weather cancellation is so rare, the only other tournament KO'd was the 1996 AT&T Pebble Beach National Pro-Am. Greenbrier County was among 44 in West Virginia under a state of emergency. Governor L. Ray Tomlin said that more than 65,000 homes remained without power. More than 150 players had committed to playing at the Greenbrier, but right now the tournament is really irrelevant at this time, and we certainly second the expressions of both the PGA Tour Commissioner Tim Fincham and Greenbrier owner Jim Justice. The cancellation really is the right thing to do, and all the focus should be in helping all the people and the families affected through this terrible time where loved ones and their homes have been lost. Fred, on a side note, or maybe a footnote really to this, the New Orleans Saints also used the Greenbrier as a practice facility during the preseason. If the resort can recover in a month, the Saints will seek another place to practice.
Yeah. I've been there and seen their practice facility. This thing must have really made a real mess. And another note too, Carlos. There was supposed to be an exemption for the Open Championship at the Greenbrier, and so they have transferred that over actually to the Barbasol Championship that's being played this week opposite the WGC Bridgestone. So guys that are playing in the Barbasol this week get a chance to go to the Open if they haven't so qualified, and they finish if they're the highest finisher this week. So good for them. And I'm going to talk more about the Greenbrier in the off week when we get here to scheduling in just a little bit. So, hey, let's talk a little bit about the Great White Shark. Times must be tough for Greg Norman. He lost his job at Fox as the anchor for golf telecasts, or he may be cash short for one of his many businesses, or he just downsizing as an empty nester. Pick whichever one you want, but he's listed his home in Jupiter and his ranch in Colorado for, wait for it, $55 million each. If you're mathematically challenged, that's a total of $110 million. Mere pocket change for the average golfer. Since Fox dumped Greg Norman over the winter from his USGA golf broadcast, we haven't seen or heard much of him. He has been keeping a low profile, but keeping busy running his many business ventures that include Great White Shark Enterprises, Greg Norman Apparel Collection, Golf Course Design, Greg Norman Estates, and also Development, Eyewear, Restaurants, a Golf Academy, of course his wine label, the Medalist Golf Club in Jupiter, and even a new water park in Myrtle Beach. If you remember, the Great White Shark Opportunity Fund, which is solely owned and operated by Norman, provides capital for startup or cash-strapped businesses in need of cash, a cash transfusion. It was launched in 2013 as a result of the global financial crisis in traditional lending markets and is an alternative lending tool providing flexible capital sources to small and mid-cap growth-oriented companies via an asset-based debt lending structure. Sounds very technical, doesn't it, Carlos? Norman also lends his very recognizable name to a variety of other businesses that pay him a tidy sum each year. His net worth is estimated slightly north of $300 million, and he's still ranked among golf's biggest money earners with over $16 million annual income. It's hard to believe he's hurting for any pocket change, but is instead looking to capitalize on an increased real estate values in southern Florida and Colorado. The ranch spans approximately 11,600 acres and is located about 130 miles from Aspen in the remote White River Valley. It includes a 14,000-square-foot main house with 8 bedrooms plus staff quarters and 11 other residences. So if you get tired of one room, you just move into a different building. There's cabins, guest houses, and staff quarters. There's also a restored 1800s dance hall, a fitness center, and a skeet shooting course, as well as equestrian facilities, barns, and other buildings. So you can even go fly fishing. It's on the White River. It's just one heck of a property. The Wall Street Journal also reports that Greg is looking to move on to other ventures and considering moving back to his native Australia. So good on you, mate. Carlos, that ends the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network, who wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. They have a top line of golf products: Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories are available at a discount. If you become a director with United Golf Network, you get an immediate 10% discount. Then there's other discounts on top of that, and you can sell to your buddies, make a few bucks. You can have your own pro shop. So visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today. Check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity, Carlos.
And with that, we wrap up our Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have our practice range. Our topic is about the condensed schedule, the 9 weeks that are left. So don't go away. We'll be talking about that rush to the finish. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range where every week Fred and I pick a topic, and we each take our shots at it. And this week, we're going to talk about this complex schedule that only means there are only 9 weeks left on the PGA and LPGA tours. And let's start by talking about, you know, the men's year. Golf's highly anticipated return to the Olympic Games has caused several changes to both tours in their schedule. The Olympic men's competition, the women's, will be played August 11th to the 14th in Rio de Janeiro in Brazil. But those are the traditional dates of the PGA Championship, so the Summer Games have had a bit of a dominant effect on the game worldwide on both tours. The PGA Championship will be now played the final week of July. That is the earliest that the PGA has been played since 1971, when the tournament was held in February as the first major of the season. The WGC Bridgestone Invitational also moves from its traditional August date, moved to the June 27th to July 3. Meanwhile, the Travelers Championship moved to June from the first week of August after the PGA, and the John Deere Classic moves from July to the week after the Travelers, opposite of the Olympics. As you saw, now the Quicken Loans National, on the other hand, it was moved up to this week from July and was slotting between the U.S. Open and the WGC Bridgestone. Meanwhile, on the LPGA, that condensed summer stretch mean that they had to go play 11 consecutive events on the calendar, kicking off in May and running through the end of July to accommodate for the Summer Olympic Games in mid-August. Included there is the tour's newest addition to the schedule, the LPGA Volvic Championship in Ann Arbor, Michigan, which was played back in May 26th, Travis Point. And during this 11 tournament run, players were competing for nearly $22 million in official purse. And there's also the second playing of the UL International Crown, which will take place July 21 to the 24 at Chicago, where Spain is the defending champion. Fred, there's a lot, and it's going to be a rush for all these players to play this condensed schedule, try to get all their points that they want to have for the final, for the FedEx Cup, for the race to the CMA Globe. So I'm going to let you go ahead and take your first shot.
Yeah, Carlos, as I mentioned earlier, I mean, just in the FedEx Cup playoffs and the bonus pool alone, we're talking about $69 million. And there's a bunch of money on the line before we even get there. So over the next few weeks, there is a lot of golf to be played. So between now and the first FedEx Cup playoff event, the Barclays, which begins August 25th, there's going to be two majors, the Open Championship and the PGA. Plus, as I mentioned, the Barbasol is held this week opposite, or I'm sorry, it's held this week opposite the WGC. And then you've got the Canadian Open. You've got the Travelers and the John Deere. And then, oh, yeah, they stuck the Olympics in there, August 11th through the 14th. And it's going to be the same week as the John Deere. So, I mean, just that alone is a lot. You know, during this run, the player of the year is going to be decided. You've got Dallin Willett and Dustin Johnson, who won the first two majors of the year. You've got Jason Day, who's has been playing outstanding this year. You know, you got the big three plus little Ricky. They really weren't a factor in the majors, except for Jordan Spieth throwing away the Masters, and that was way back in April. You know, I hate to say this, but for the players, on a positive note, since the Greenbriars rained out, the players who are planning to play in West Virginia will get an extra week at home. Once the FedEx Cup begins, things don't really slow down because, as I mentioned, they're playing for so much money. Oh, yeah, then 12 of the top Americans and Europeans are going to go to Hazeltine for the Ryder Cup the week following the Tour Championship. And on the women's side, they have three majors left to decide, plus the UL International Crown, plus the Olympics the week immediately following the men's competition in August. For the top women players in the world, this will demand traveling to Portland this week, then California for the U.S. Women's Open, across country to Toledo for the Marathon Classic, slide over Chicago for the UL International Crown, just a short hop over the Atlantic to England for the Ricoh Women's British Open, back to Ontario, Canada for the Canadian Women's Open, and after some time off and the Olympics, go back to France for the final major of the year at the Evian Championship September 15th and 18th. After that, the LPGA heads to Asia for six events in September and October. not everybody goes over and plays in all those, and they're all invitational, so they kind of pick and choose, but still involves traveling to Asia. And then they come back to Mexico in November for the Lorena Ochoa Invitational, plus the season-ending CME Group Tour Championship in Florida, November 17th through the 20th. That takes us right up to Thanksgiving, Carlos. Turkey, anyone? You know, there's going to be precious time off on either the men's or women's tours. Plus, as I mentioned, the women fly back and forth to Europe twice in the next 8 weeks, plus throw in a trip to Brazil for the Olympics. The bright side is that many will get a couple weeks off in August before heading back to Europe before the Ebbian and the Asian events that follow. So, Carlos, it just seems impossible to me. We're not even to the 4th of July yet. We're talking about the end of the golf season when really here in my neck of the woods, the golf season is really just getting going good. But there's a lot on the line. There's a lot of money out there to play for, and they are professionals after all. So that's what they're playing for is the money and those big trophies. So, Carlos, I don't know, man. It's another negative against the Olympics. I know you love them, I get it. I understand. But I just don't – it screws everything. For professional golfers, it makes it a real problem. So – And here we are whining, being a golfer and whining about too much golf. I mean, they're playing for millions of dollars. They're playing at the best courses in the world. They're treated like kings and queens. They travel first class. They travel in private jets. They stay in five-star resorts. You can't be too sorry for them, but it does become a grind, believe it or not. It is a job. It gets to be a tough gig. So, maybe we shouldn't be too sorry for them, I guess, huh, Carlos?
We shouldn't. You know why? Because the stupid thing is the fall tour. I mean, the events on the fall that the PGA Tour is putting that nobody listens or hears. I mean, if they would have leave everything like it is, they just could push a little bit of the schedule farther in the year.
Yeah.
They could have played. I mean, it's no excuse really for why they had to condense the schedule. And even though
there is an excuse, it's all that big sponsor money that they wanted.
but they knew a long time ago that golf was this year. Right? You could plan. There's no excuse at all for this schedule. And even though I still have no excuse for anybody, because the Travelers Championship, if you don't want to, don't play it. That's the week before. If you don't want to, don't play the Wyndham Championship. You have 2 weeks there. I mean, then you just go for the FedEx Cup, for the Barclays, the Deutsche, the BMW, the Tour Championship, and then the Ryder Cup. You can take those weeks off if you really wanted to go to the Olympics, which is no excuse, really. To me, I don't see it as anything of a hassle to play that, okay, because they can skip the Travelers like a lot of people do before the majors. They just don't play the week before. Don't play the week before or the week after. It's really no excuse. I mean, even then, you're in Connecticut. From there to Rio, it's the same thing as going cross-country to go to California or something else. I mean, to me, the flying of these people is just the same thing they're used to flying all around. And for the women, they're okay with it. You know why? Because they have time. Theirs is August 17th to the 20th, and they don't play. Their last tournament is the Rico Women's Open, which is in England, and they have 3 weeks. Okay, until the Olympics. They have 2 weeks free before going there, so they're easily having time. It's okay, they have the 11 weeks in a row, but they are going to have 2 weeks free. Then after the Olympics is the Canadian Pacific Women's Open. So, that's a good one and all that, but if you don't want to, you just take it out. In 2 weeks after that, 3 weeks really after the Olympics, is when the Evian Championship is. So I don't see it. I don't see the problem with the scheduling. With the PGA Tour, I think they messed up. They should have never, ever thought about condensing the schedule. If you just move farther a little bit the schedule, and they had time to talk to their sponsors, to talk to everybody, TV scheduling, everything. They could have just done a little bit more because nobody really cares about the fall tour. I mean, it's not the fall tour. It's not the start of the season. But it really is insignificant, really, right now compared to the rest of the season. So, to me, it's still no excuse to miss the Olympics and fault the Olympics for this special thing. And, like, at the end of the day, like you're saying, they're playing for money. Hey, it's not like they're doing it for free. Yes, the Olympics, they are. But that's a different topic. And to me, there is no reason whatsoever to fault the Olympics for this. If at all, the organizing organizations for this, the PGA Tour and the LPGA, if you want to blame somebody, but I think the LPGA did it better. They gave 2 weeks off before the Olympics.
Yeah, the only problem with pushing back, you know, you'd have to do away actually with a couple of the fall series, because you push those into the European Tour's final run to Dubai, that, you know, some of the guys go back and forth, play some of the fall events and run over to Europe and play some of that stuff. So you would run into that a little bit if you'd pushed the fall series events back a couple of weeks. But, yeah, that seemed like it would maybe make more sense, doesn't it, Carlos? Even if it did compete a little bit with the European Tour, maybe that would have made more sense and appease the top players a little bit. They probably would have got some of these other guys to play, maybe. I don't know. But it's a problem. It's been a problem from the beginning. I'm not going to go into any other things about the Olympics. We've covered that enough tonight. But it's just, you know, man, it's just this whole thing just seems like it just crams the whole year together, and all of a sudden, boom, here we are. Everything comes down to the last 8 weeks. But, you know, I remember over the last couple of years we've been talking about once we get past the U.S. Open and we get to the Open Championship time, the rest of the year goes really quick. And all of a sudden, if you're on the outside of the FedEx Cup looking in, or if you're down there at number 70 or so, you're trying to move up so that you don't get bounced out in the first couple of weeks of the FedEx Cup so that your bonus gets higher. So, it's a good thing that they're playing for so much money if there's those guys, but it's a bad thing it crams it in. And I'm telling you, Carlos, you watch. You know, we've had a lot of injuries. You watch this fall. We're going to be talking about injuries again. I guarantee it.
And with that, we'll wrap up our practice range. We're going to take our last short break. When we come back, we have our final putts. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for Final Thoughts. I'm going to start talking right away about, you know, great news for the Aussie Open at the Royal Sydney Golf Club this year, when the 2014 champion Jordan Spieth, he was confirmed as a starter for the third year in a row. He was just a very likable young golfer with lots of potential when he arrived at the Emirates Australian Open there at the Australian Golf Club back in 2014. And in the final round, the then 21-year-old shot a course record of 8-under-63, which is now rated as one of the historic event's best-ever winning rounds, to take the title from a field that included defending champion Rory McIlroy and then world number 3 Adam Scott. He went on from there onto international fame and glory and will return now in November as a double major winner. There could be a showdown looming against Jason Day, because he has already let slip that he's likely to be competing in Australia this year, most likely at the World Cup of Golf at Kingston Heath, which is 1 week after the Australian Open. So a very good chance he will be there a week early for the Aussie Open. As well as the proximity of the World Cup should also draw a number of other international golfing stars to Sydney. So we'll keep an eye on that. And world's number 2 in the women, Lindsay Park, she has withdrawn from the U.S. Women's Open and the UL International Crown with a nagging left thumb injury. The U.S. Women's Open will be played July 7th to the 10th at the Cordevalle Resort in San Martin, California. Park is a two-time U.S. Open swimming champion, in winning at in 2008 at Interlaken and in 2013 at Sabonek. Park will also miss the team-based UL International Crown later in July. She withdrew her name from the competition over concerns that her injury will not have healed by the time the event happens. Hana Yang was the first alternate for the Korean team, but she withdrew her name from consideration, as also she's battling with health issues that have included treatment for anemia. She'll be replaced on the South Korean team by Soyoung Ryu. And I don't think they'll be lacking any quality there. So they can have two teams playing in the UL International Crown. And finally, a lot of golf has been played since the U.S. Solheim Cup team beat the Europeans by a single point last September, but the celebration resumed on Monday in Washington, D.C., where Julie Inkster's squad gathered to tour the White House and was honored by President Barack Obama. From the look of things on social media, the ladies are having a blast. They were seeing the sights, acting like tourists, and enjoyed each other's company. Fred, several members of the team also documented the adventure snapshots. The photos are all over the internet. If you want to, you can go and see the U.S. Solheim Cup team there being honored by the President, Barack Obama.
Hey, Carlos, I got just a couple items here to wrap up with tonight. Tommy's Honor, a new movie from the U.K., is to be released for distribution. It held its world premiere last week at the Edinburgh Film Festival. Tommy's Honor is the story of a father and son sharing a passion for a game but holding different values off the course. They clash repeatedly, and young Tom, who had won four Open championships by the age of 21, died at the age of 24 from a broken heart after the death of his wife and newborn son. The elder Tom was left to carry on in life and uphold his son's honor. I'm not sure when it's coming to the U.S., but watch for it in your local theaters. If you've been wanting to go to Scotland for a golf trip, now may be your best opportunity. With the U.K.'s pound declining as much as 10% versus the U.S. dollar, travel to the U.K. is becoming more attractive. England's vote to leave the European Union has devalued the pound even more. Two great links to start to book a Scottish golf getaway: Habersham and Baker. That's Habersham, it's just www.haversham.com, or Premier, who we've had Premier on the show before. It's premiergolf.com. Check them out. They're going at a discount right now because of the difference in the dollar and the pound. Hey, staying in Scotland, you know we got to talk about Donald Trump, Carlos. I got Donald in here. Donald took out time off from campaigning last week to open his new Turnberry. The media and invited guests were closely monitored, but a prankster still got in unnoticed and created a stir. After the festivities at Turnberry, Donald flew to Aberdeen and had dinner with Rupert Murdoch. That had to be interesting. Trump says his European courses are doing well, but a Reuters article argues the point. How great his golf course investments have been is debatable. An examination of them shows that Trump will likely lost millions of dollars on his golf projects. The analysis shows high costs and modest current valuations. Using a conservative estimate of the amount Trump has spent, he may be breaking even or making modest gains. On higher estimates based on what Trump has said he is spending, he's got to be losing money. Trump disputes the analysis. He said Reuters calculations overestimated what he had spent and underestimated the value of his investments. He declined to provide figures for his expenditure on courses or their current or future market values. The golf courses are doing very well. Every one of them makes a lot of money, said the author of The Art of the Deal. They are not really golf investments. They are development deals. They're just fantastic. Everyone loves them. It will be fantastic. I can just hear him. Can't you, Carlos? Hey, Akashmit, they're the people that own Titleist and FootJoy and Pinnacle and all those things. As reported last year, the company filed for an initial public offering, and it's going to allow shareholders in the U.S. to cash out part of their stakes. It's been estimated the company could fetch a valuation of about $2 billion, with a B, Acushnet is owned by Korean retailer Fila Korea Limited and a consortium of investors led by Myria Assets, which acquired the company in 2011 for about $1.23 billion. So somebody stands to make a pretty good chunk of money in that deal. Hey, Carlos, the membership at Muirfield, they won a mulligan. The substantial majority of our members voted for change, and many have voiced their disappointment with the ballot result and with subsequent events. The club committee believes that a clear and decisive vote in favor of admitting women as members is required to enable us to begin the task of restoring the reputation of the club that has been damaged by the earlier ballot outcome. According to Jeff Shackelford on Golf Channel's Morning Drive, the decision to revote was twofold. The club stood to lose a good deal of revenue by not hosting the Open Championship every 10 years, and the backlash against the club from media and the golf community alike seemed to have swayed the members. It always comes down to money, Carlos. It always comes down to money. Never fails. So you can always follow the money. One final note, the PGA Professional National Tournament is currently being held in Verona, New York. We'll wrap up tomorrow. It can be seen on Golf Channel in the afternoon. It hosted 300 of the very best club professionals in the United States. The top 20 at the end of the final round earned spots in the PGA Championship at Baltusrol at the end of July. Carlos, that's me. I'm out for June the 28th, 2016.
I just want to finish. I had two notes here, and I just ran into them. And today was a sad day for sports, because two legends were lost today, and one of them was a former NFL head coach and influential defensive coordinator, Buddy Ryan. He was 85. He was outspoken and coaching the NFL for 26 seasons, and a lot of people would remember him for building some of football's top defenses with a relentlessness that focused on creating havoc in the field. I remember once when he was asked, hey, the 46 is just an 8-foot man. And he said, yeah, that's like saying that Marilyn Monroe is just a girl. But he was outspoken and a legendary coach. And also, talking about legendary coaches, Pat Summitt, who built the University of Tennessee's late volunteers into a perennial power on the way to becoming the winningest coach in the history of the major college basketball. She died Tuesday. Also, her death came 5 years after she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. She was 64, so rest in peace. Our condolences go to their families. So, Fred, with that, yes, you want to say something?
No, I was just going to second that, Carlos. Well said.
Okay, with that, we'll wrap up another week of the Backman Report, and we always hear. Thank you for listening to us. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Blog Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, hey, check it out on iTunes or TuneIn. If you haven't done so, follow the show. Our Twitter ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Fred Alfader, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.